Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Locked On Cavaliers. As always, I'm your host Chris Manning from Fear the Sword and The Step Back. Today, I'm going to preview the Cavs-Raptors game. Just again, a note, I'll be here today, tomorrow was here yesterday, and I will not be here Thursday, Friday. Carter Rodriguez will be filling in for me as my guest host. Just want to make sure you guys know that you're still getting a podcast, you're still getting your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, but going to be a little twist on it with Carter stepping in. That being said, we're going to look at the Raptors game. Cavs are 1-0 against Toronto this season. The Raptors are, of course, the team the Cavs played in the Eastern Conference Finals last season. This is a team that has, its goal really is to beat the Cleveland Cavaliers and to move into where they think they can be. That's not something I think is all that likely. Right now they're 7-2. They've won three straight coming into tonight. They're right behind the Hawks and the Cavs in the East. One game ahead of the Hornets, technically tied with the Hawks, but you're looking at a team that is still playing very good. They've been really, really good this year. And that starts with DeMar DeRozan, who we're going to spotlight as our opposing player for this game. DeMar DeRozan's playing out of his goddamn mind. That is putting it sort of bluntly and sort of maybe a little bit dramatically, but this is a guy that, you know, gets a lot of hate because of how he plays. He doesn't play the modern style. He doesn't shoot threes. He really can't shoot threes, but this is a guy that is just having a great year. Right now, he's averaging 34 points a game. He's leading the NBA and scoring two more points than Russell Westbrook. He's outscoring Lillard, Harden, Anthony Davis, Russell Westbrook, these guys that are the guys you think of as higher-class stars than DeMar DeRozan that are in situations where they are considered the quote-unquote direct guy, and I think I would say in Toronto, he's not even the best player in that team. I'm a guy that thinks Kyle Lowry is the best player on that team. But you look at everything else, he's shooting 52.8% from the field, 54.9% from 2% on 2% shots, which is where he gets a lot of his really, really a good mid-range player. And he's got an almost 60% shooting percentage. This is a player that's really feasting on these certain spots on the floor. He's really just kind of going at things the way he does things, and he's just performing at the highest level. Now, he's certainly going to dip at some point. I would not expect DeMar DeRozan to really play at this particular level for a whole season. It'd be kind of unexpected, to be quite honest. He's a guy who I do really like. He's a guy I certainly believe I'm maybe a bigger fan of than I think other people may be. But if you just look at what he is, he's a guy who has never been this good. He's never been a guy who is this efficient in this game. If you go look at his shot chart at NBA.com/stats, he's green or yellow everywhere from the three-point line. And so in the mid-range, he's only average at the rim, but he's green in the mid-range. He's green right in front of the three-point line. He's just playing out of his mind right now in that area. There's no way he keeps that up. By the way, green means, you know, he's above league average in those spots. He's just playing out of his mind right now. At some point, he's going to come back to earth in some way because of how he plays. I mean, you look at last year, he's taking more shots this year, but last year he shot 44.6% of the field. He shot 33.8% from three, but only took 1.8 a game. And if you look at his shot chart and you look at what he was last season when the Raptors were maybe, when I argued that maybe that was the best they were ever going to be, this is a guy who was not quite as good in the spots that you would think he'd be really good in, that and that he is feasting in this year. If you go inside the 3-point line again by that same token, which is sort of a flawed way of looking at it, he is yellow in 6 spots, only 1 green spot just outside the right on the right side in the restricted area, and then he's red and basically right in front of the corner 3 spots inside the 2. Yellow in 2 3-point spots, but with only a combined distribution of 3.1% in the 2 spots where he was a quote-unquote league average from 3. Not a good 3-point shooter, not even a good corner 3 3-point shooter, really. Okay from the left last year, but, you know, kind of from the right. He's okay there. If you're going to have him shoot threes, that's what you'd want him to do, but he's not a guy when he's getting the ball at the top of the key that's going to shoot three. You know how they're going, how to defend him. And right now, he's just playing out of his mind. How the Cavs defend him is going to be sort of the interesting question here. Of course, J.R. Smith would presumably get the first crack at this, because J.R. Smith is a guy who's actually like a pretty physical defender. He's not as big as DeRozan. He's not necessarily the best defender in the world, but he's a guy who plays a very distinct style. He's a guy who does a lot of certain things well. J.R. Smith has that particular set of skills, and he's just a solid team defender. But if DeRozan goes off, do you move LeBron James onto him? Do you move someone like, I guess, Iman Shumpert onto him if J.R. really struggles? I mean, you have options for sure. I personally am not sure what I would do, but I think you certainly have options. I think if he goes off, I think late in the game you would see LeBron on him. But to understand DeRozan a little bit more, Sean Woodley from Locked On Raptors and from Raptors HQ, SB Nation's Raptors blog, recorded a little clip for me. He's going to just explain to you how good DeRozan's been this year, and then we'll get back and I'll give you the 3 takeaways from today's game.
Hey there, Sean Woodley from Locked On Raptors here to give you the skinny on DeMar DeRozan's ridiculous start to the 2016-17 NBA season. Right now, if you haven't been paying attention, you probably know that DeMar DeRozan is leading the NBA in scoring at 34 points per game. Through 9 games, 8 of them have seen him eclipse the 30-point mark. That's the first guy since Michael Jordan to do that over the first 9 games. Arbitrary endpoints and all that stuff. But the things that DeRozan is doing so far this year are almost unprecedented in NBA history, and it's been tremendous fun to watch. It's also got to be surprising for a lot of people, considering sort of the cloud that has hung over DeRozan over the course of his career, that he's not a 3-point shooter, that he relies a lot on the mid-range. It hasn't mattered. He has been lights out. He's carrying the Raptors' offense right now. He's got a 37.5 usage rate, which obviously is leading to the high volume of shot attempts. He's at 24 attempts per game, and the high number of points that he's just putting up been carrying the offensive load. A lot of the Raptors so far this season have struggled to hit their threes. Through that, DeRozan has just been lights out, and he's putting up points at a blistering rate right now. I mentioned those 8 games that he's had 30-plus points. Over the course of the entire 2015-16 season, DeRozan had 14 30-plus point games. So, clearly on pace to break that mark, and it's just been a lot of fun to watch. How's he been doing it? He's been, kind of being DeMar DeRozan. He's gotten to the line a lot. He's got 10 free throw attempts per game. That's a career best for him, up from 8.4 last year. But he's really sort of carved out a role for himself as a guy who's going to get to the line a lot and get a lot of really easy points. He gets to the rim pretty much anytime he wants, and that's always been sort of his response when people ask if he's going to shoot the three. He says he can get to the rim whenever he wants, so why wouldn't he do that? And, how can you blame him? He has been getting to the rim whenever he sees fit, and getting those fouls and getting those easy buckets around the basket. The most stark thing about what he's doing so far is he has been absolutely lights out from the mid-range, which for a guy who he's always lived in the mid-range and he's always shot around 39, 40, sometimes 35, depending where he is on the court from the mid-range, he has been just automatic so far this year. So far this season, he's shooting 58.6% from 10 to 16 feet out, and from 16 feet to the 3-point line, he's at 52.2%, which is crazy and unsustainably high. And we'll get to the question of the sustainability soon, but we just have to roll through some of these crazy numbers, because through those shooting numbers, he's putting up a 31.3 PER, which is 10 points higher than what he put up last season, which was a 21.5, which is, well above average, nothing to sneeze at whatsoever, but 31.3 is Jordan and peak Tracy McGrady and LeBron territory. So, and that's where the question of sustainability comes in, right? The 37.5 usage rate will come down. It's been closer to about 29 or 30 over the last couple seasons, usually sharing a load with Kyle Lowry. Lowry is sort of taking a step back offensively this season. He's just not looking for his shot as much, and his shot has been a little wayward. He's not, you know, knocking down threes with the regularity that you'd like to see from Lowry. I'm sure that will come back as, you know, DeRozan's crazy numbers will eventually come back down to earth. But for now, DeRozan has been carrying the offense, and that 37.5 will come down, and eventually the volume, the sheer volume of what he's doing, will eventually decrease as a result. That is fine. People seem to be putting the caveat when they talk about this DeRozan hot streak that, you know, yeah, he's been great, but it's going to come back down to earth. Of course it is. The numbers he's putting up right now are unprecedented in Raptors history, almost untouched in the history of the NBA. Yes, it's going to come down. DeRozan is not going to continue to shoot nearly 60% from 10 to 16 feet out. That's just not going to happen. There are some things he's doing differently to make his offense a little more efficient, and they're encouraging signs. And also, who cares? It's been 9 games. We're 11% of the way into the season right now. And for DeRozan to be doing this over that long of a stretch, no amount of regression is going to take away that stretch where he has led the Raptors to a 7-2 record. So yes, it's going to come back down, but there are some things, as I mentioned, that he's doing that are encouraging. He is getting to the rim and getting to the line more than he ever has. As I mentioned, he's up almost 2 attempts per game from his career best last season, 8.4 free throw attempts per game. He's at 10 a game right now. I believe he's second in the NBA in that category. The other thing, too, is DeRozan used to take a lot of shots really off balance and made shots a lot more difficult than they needed to be. You know, he would have a defender draped all over him, and he would do a little fadeaway and just make it a tougher shot than it had to be. This season, you haven't really seen the fadeaways. He looks on balance when he's taking his shots. He's leaning into a lot more shots, sort of creating floaters for himself when he's in that 10-foot range and just sort of, you know, tightening the distance between himself and the basket by leaning into his shots and just sort of having nice touch around the basket in those situations. And a lot of help has come from the Raptors' bigs. The Raptors are among the league leaders in screen assists right now. Jonas Valanciunas is an awesome screener. Lucas Nogueira has emerged to be a really strong screener. Patrick Patterson does some really nice screening on pin downs and things like that that get DeRozan open. And the Raptors have done an awesome job of getting DeRozan in space. There's been a few times this season where he's curled around a couple screens and just had, you know, acres of space to either rise up for a shot or get to the basket with a head of steam. Everything about DeMar DeRozan's season so far has been fantastic. Will it all come back down to earth? It's going to come back down to, you know, an area just above earth, I think. I think this has a really good chance of being his best season of his career, just based on the head start he has right now. And, you know, there is a chance that he can contend for a scoring title if he keeps up this level of usage. To have a guy who might hit 25 or 33 pointers over the course of a full season be the NBA's scoring champion would be pretty funny here in 2016. Overall, DeMar DeRozan has been fantastic, and if you're looking at, you know, an MVP conversation, he has to be in sort of the top 5 or 7 in the early going here, and it should be fun to see what he can do against the Cleveland Cavaliers on Tuesday night.
And now, insurance-minded speeches from Geico.
Hardship. My grandmother would go through it every month to pay her insurance bill. First, she would handwrite a paper check, in cursive. Then, using her own tongue, she would wet a stamp for an envelope. Today, however, we need not weary our hands and tongues. Today, we can pay our Geico bill with the Geico app. Away with hardship, in with bill pay on the Geico app. Thank you.
So there you have it from Sean, some really good insight from him. He knows DeRozan certainly better than I do, and you should go listen, subscribe, rate that podcast if you want to hear some more Raptors stuff. To get into the game a little bit more, the first key I have is that the Cavs can probably shoot Jonas Valanciunas off the floor in this game. We saw glimpses of this on Sunday in the Cavs' win against the Hornets, but you look at what Valanciunas is. He's not the most mobile son in the world. He certainly has mobility to an extent, but he is not a guy who I think certainly can really hang with a Channing Frye or Kevin Love if the Cavs want to go that route. I think the Cavs certainly can do a bunch of different things of what's going to go on and what's going to go on with how the Cavs attack this evening. Tristan Thompson is certainly a very, very good player. Tristan Thompson is a guy who can do just a ton of different things. But he's also a guy who I think has his limit. He certainly has his limitations, and that's fine. He certainly can struggle with threes, and he just looked really good. I mean, and this is a great quote. He said this on Sunday Category. The Cavs can pull him away from the rim. Channing Frye can pick and pop for days. He's going to set him up for on-point threes. I mean, this is a perfect pairing. This is why, looking back to last year, I think if the Cavs struggle on offense, that's the fix. You guys, Frye is not a good rebounder, but he's a guy who can change the game, and I think with Kevin Love, too. Defense is maybe to a fault at this point. Really show him a ton of respect from three. Believe in his reputation as a shooter and who he is as a player more so than what the numbers say, because he's not a guy who I think is a particularly great three-point shooter, but it's certainly something. This is a part of the game I think the Cavs really can unlock. And actually, we have another clip from the Dunked On podcast, which is hosted by Nate Duncan and Danny LaRue, Danny's the host of Locked On Warriors, and we'll have him on this show at some point to preview Cavs Warriors probably around Christmas. They talked about this when they talked about the Cavs and their 15-60 podcast on the Dunked On NBA podcast, which you can find on iTunes and all those different places. So here's Nate and Danny talking about the Cavs with a bit of a focus on Tristan Love, Channing Frye, the things I just talked about in the first takeaway from the game.
So now we'll move to the Cavaliers, who are 7-1, and they are playing, as we record this, against the Hornets and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. He is playing tonight.
So one thing that we're going to reference here a little bit for some of these teams is SRS, which is basically just a schedule-adjusted point differential from Basketball Reference. Despite being 7-1, the Cavs are only 7th in that metric. I think the big reason for that is their defense. They're 2nd in offense, 13th in defense so far. And, I mean, that's kind of about what we expect from this team during the regular season. They don't need to be any better than that. They have a history of turning up their defense quite a bit in the playoffs, and there's no other teams in the East that can keep up with them offensively anyway. I think one thing that they've done now that they have Channing Frye is that they just play other team centers off the floor. In some of their competition, they have pretty good centers, the Raptors being one of those, with Valanciunas, who of course was hurt last year and didn't play that much in that series, but he might not play that much if they play this year either, because they just go with Frye or Love at center. And yeah, those guys aren't great defensive players, but you still have guys like LeBron who can be pretty versatile defensively. And with Frye or Love at center, if you have a traditional center, there's just no way of dealing with it. Like, the Wizards just didn't play Marcin Gortat at all in the fourth quarter, because he's one of their best players at this point in time, because Love and Frye just space him out.
And while a lot of people would probably make the parallel to the Warriors' death lineup, the one that I think is actually more pertinent here is Oklahoma City, when they went to what I called the Megadeth lineup. And the reason for that is because they got a lot of the defensive stuff by having the LeBron-Durant parallel is there. Like, LeBron can be a good help defender. Durant was very good in the playoffs. And also because that is not a criticism of the guy they normally have at center. Tristan Thompson's a solid player. It's just that having him off the floor in those circumstances unleashes other elements that they have, including Amon Shumpert, who has done a better job this year than when he really struggled last year.
Yeah, he has been fantastic. He's shooting 53% on threes. You remember he started last year with that wrist injury and really never got going. He looked like he was a little heavier than he'd like to be. He reportedly lost weight during this offseason. He's at a 70% true shooting, although extremely low usage, 12%. But that's, I think, what he needs to do. He's been playing a lot. They have not been using a traditional point guard hardly at all. Kate Felder played like his first 7 minutes of the season against Washington the other night and did okay. But Shumpert has been playing more. He's been playing as, guarding point guards and then playing with LeBron James on the second unit. And I think that's a huge development for their matchup against Golden State, because Shumpert really was not playable offensively in their playoff series last year. I think he was playing like under 10 minutes a game in the finals. But now he can, as someone who could guard Steph Curry, who can pick up for Kyrie Irving as well defensively when needed, can guard Klay Thompson. He did a great job on Klay Thompson in the 2015 finals. All of that, I think, it could be useful, and he could be a part of some of their best lineups. We're going to talk about this a ton, because I think these teams still look like the favorites, although the Clippers may have something to say about that to get to the finals. with this Love at center, Fry at center thing, no East team really can deal with that. Maybe Boston can with Horford, but even he might be a little hard pressed to guard someone like Fry or Love. But Golden State can deal with that, right? They have the guys who can switch. They have Green at center, and Fry, you know, can't really play at all against Golden State. At least that's what Lou thought in the finals. So that's really the biggest reason I think that Golden State can match up well with them, in addition to, you know, being maybe the one team that offensively can keep up with them also. Whereas if you there were to be another finals matchup, the Clippers with DeAndre Jordan, the Spurs, you know, that LaMarcus Aldridge, those teams are going to really struggle to deal with a lineup of Love or Fry at center.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And something else I wanted to note that's just, it's significant to a point, is that while Cleveland is second in offense, and that's great, Kevin Love's only shooting 31% from three. Like, you think that there's more space in this, though. Something that they've done really well is they're shooting a lot more corner threes than anybody else. They're at 9.5 per game. The next closest team is 8.1, so that's a pretty significant difference. And they're making 44.7% of those, which is fourth in the league.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And getting a large number of corner threes is generally a sign of a healthy offense, because we know that defenses really try to take that away. Love, I talked about this a little bit with Bontemps on Tuesday night, that I think when you're going with Love at center, just the poison that I would probably pick is just leaving him open for threes, because while he is a good volume shooter and he has a ton of gravity, I think that teams actually maybe respect his three-pointer a little bit more than his actual results would suggest. And his talent, certainly spacing the floor and being able to get those shots off, is big, but he's not really a knockdown guy. He's not a 40% guy. He's like this American white dude who shoots a lot of threes, so you think that we can't let this guy shoot. But yeah, as you mentioned, he's at 31% this year. Really, I think probably like 36, 37% probably for his Cavs career. Never only been above 40%, I think, one year in his career. So it's more the volume that's really impressive than his accuracy. So I might let him, you know, say, all right, we're just going to close out on this guy a little bit softer. And if he beats us, he beats us. It's not a great option, but it might be the best for some of these Eastern Conference teams that feel like they want to still play a traditional center. The other thing I'm noting, too, is LeBron actually not shooting incredibly well from the field so far. He's under 50% and still at 28% on threes. A little bit better, 36% on long twos. But while he did have that brief renaissance with the jumper when he was really killing it against Golden State, doesn't look like that's something that's going to be reliable throughout the whole season, despite the fact that he supposedly worked on it. Maybe it'll improve, but so far, still looking like the guy that he's been the last year and a half or so with his jump shot.
So there you have Nate and Danny. Thanks for them for doing that. And again, go find that podcast, the Dunked On podcast, on iTunes, wherever you listen to podcasts. It's, you know, it's a very in-depth NBA podcast, if that's something you're into. They always do a free agent preview where they mock it, and they have guys like Kevin Pelton and Dan Feldman and Danny and Nate and everyone like mock up an offseason, take control of teams, and I always learn a lot from sort of how that works. So second takeaway, you look at Kyrie versus Lowry. This is not something that I think should be a surprise that we're going to talk about. Two of the best point guards in the league, and probably, in my opinion, the two best point guards in the Eastern Conference. No shade to John Wall, but he just hasn't played all that well of late, and I think Kyrie's been really good this year. I think, they're just going to match up in such an interesting way. Lowry is a bulkier player. He plays a little bit more, not low to the ground is another way to say it, but he's not going to, he's going to push Kyrie physically in ways that we haven't seen. You look at how Kyrie's going to play this game. He's played very well this season. You look at everything he's done. He's also kind of, it feels like he's due for another really good game. He struggled against the Sixers. He sat out over on Sunday when the Cavs kind of just went to different lineups, which I think, you know, made quite a bit of sense. I think, you know, you look at what he needed to do there, I think it didn't make sense from Lou's perspective, at least, to throw them back in there after he hadn't, you know, really done all that much. But this is a game where Kyrie can certainly make a really, really big impact. He's a guy who plays up to these two guys play because they match him in such interesting ways. And you look at Kyrie's past couple games, I'm 8-17 from the field and 1-5 from three. Against Washington, really good game, 4-9 from three. But I'm waiting for that big Kyrie, just maxing low 8 against Philly. Every other game, he scored at least 20 points. I think this is another game where to feel like a big Kyrie game, kind of like the Houston game felt like when he scored 32. I think he can defend Toronto. Not only is he going to have to defend Kyle Lowry, but he's probably a backup point guard. you're looking at how this is sort of going to play itself out. I think a lot falls on Kyrie in this matchup. He has to defend Lowry, as we know. He has to defend the pick and roll as well. He has to be active on both ends. And I think if he does that and he plays to the level he did, I think it's a big game for him. Just when the Cavs did beat Toronto, by the way, in the second game of the year back on October 28th, 3-point win for the Cavs, 38 minutes for Kyrie, 10 of 23 from the field, 5 of 9 from 3. Only went to the line one time. I'd like to see him get to the line more as well. He's gotten the line 6 times in 2 games after getting to the line 7 times against Atlanta and 8 times against Houston. His biggest games of the year, for the most part, are when he also gets the line. Just a little note there. But he finished with 26 points, 6 assists, but 7 turnovers. Let's see the turnovers cut down. Let's see him play an impact on both ends, and I think that'd be a really, really big moment for Kyrie Irving. And I think, and I personally am very excited to see how he plays against Toronto, and he'll be a guy we talk about. Lastly, how is this rotation going to look? Now, this is something I think we've talked about a bunch on this show. We've talked about, you know, if Jordan McRae is going to play back and dating back to the season preview. We've talked about it in a number of different incarnations, but Sunday was sort of an interesting day for these discussions. In the fourth quarter, as you know, when we talked about this in yesterday's Hornets recap, Jordan McRae played the fourth quarter. That was not something I think any of us expected. And he played bench guys. Tyronn Lue played bench guys in the fourth quarter. We also saw Kay Felder in the first half. And I think some of that is because J.R. Smith was out. It'd be interesting to see, in hindsight, as 2020, you know, let's say J.R.'s having an off night. He's only 1 of 6 from 3 or something like that going into the fourth quarter. Or late in the third or something like that. Does Lue want to still try McRae if J.R. is healthy? I would venture to guess no. He maybe Shumpert gets that minutes or something else. But I think maybe McRae did enough to maybe get some minutes and get a chance to play as part of the regular rotation. I wouldn't be opposed to it because I think it lessens Smith's minutes. I think, you know, maybe it pushes Mike Dunleavy to kind of get everything rewired because he's really struggled to start the year, especially from three. And I think maybe it'd be interesting to see if we see Kay Felder again. He wasn't really that good against the Hornets. A tad reckless. Certainly active, but he looked just a little bit out of his own water there, out of his own depth. And I think those 5 minutes were just not enough for Kay Felder to play in the second half, to consistently get to do more. And that's sort of the issue there. He played sort of reckless. He played a little bit out of control. And again, I think he looked like a guy who really just kind of looked a little bit out of its depth. And Charlotte's a good team. I mean, he's going to struggle against a team that when he's guarding Kemba Walker like he did, when he's defending actual NBA players. But when he's looking that out of depth, do you really want to play him when it comes to playing against the Raptors? Do you want to see him play meaningful minutes against good teams? I'm not sure that's the case. I think that's certainly something you have to kind of consider when you think about what his future might look like in the next 6 months. I think he probably should get another chance. I think it's worth rolling the dice on there. I've said that before, but I think the counter that I think is worth noting would be to maybe see more McRae. I think he played pretty well. Didn't shoot that well, which is sort of the concern, but because what he does is score. But I think the key, more so than anything for him, is really going to be, can he hit threes and can he defend? If he can defend, I think you can make an argument that he deserves some minutes, especially because it would take some of the burden off JR, take some of the burden off LeBron at times, can take some burden off Kyrie. And I know he's not the quote-unquote backup point guard like we maybe thought he could be, but I think those are all kind of valid things with McRae. With Kay Felder, I don't think it's there. And I think Lue is a guy who really values what have you done for me lately when it comes to guys trying to get rotation minutes on a night-to-night basis. He's playing, typically playing the guys who are playing better. McRae played pretty well on Sunday. He was in the fourth quarter when the Cavs went with a bench unit, featuring with them with LeBron at the centerpiece of it, kind of just destroying Charlotte. Channing Frye, of course, was the big player in that, but Shumpert played really well. And McRae was on the floor for that and didn't hurt them, and he didn't get pulled. So I certainly think that maybe that leads him into getting some minutes tonight. We'll have to see. So that's going to be it for today's show. It's another preview show. So thanks again to Sean Woodley from Locked on Raptors for talking about DeRozan with us, for sending over that clip. Shout out to Nate Duncan and Danny LaRue for sending over that clip from the Dunked On podcast. We'll be back tomorrow. I'll be recapping the Raptors game. And then and previewing the Indiana Pacers game, so you have to check out and look out for that. But just one other thing, I just want to apologize for a couple of yawns you've probably heard in the show. Sometimes when I record games and record game recap podcasts, I'm getting home at 2 in the morning and then recording, so if I'm a little tired, I apologize. Just something I will make sure I'm a little more vigilant about cutting those yawns out, because I know as someone who listens to a lot of podcasts, yawning isn't great to hear, but I just, 2 in the morning, my bad. Make sure that it's not in there again, because I know I got a couple of reviews and a couple of emails about that, so I apologize. But again, we'll be back tomorrow previewing Pacers game and recapping the Raptors game. So this has been Chris Manning. This has been Locked On Cavs. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99. And our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.